You're checking your emails? Dude, what are you doing? I'm trying to do a podcast, bro. Did we choose a wrong time?
No.
Let's go. What is up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Sitting with me today is an incredible drummer with a unique sound and a unique style. You know him from drumming with Jack White, Black Milk, Nas, Talib Kweli. Man, the list goes on and on. There's a lot. You know him because he's got custom drums. He's got custom everything. We're going to talk all about it. Ladies and gentlemen, make a lot of noise for Daru Jones. Yes. Dear Lord, thank you. Thank you so much for Daru Jones.
Man, thank you so much for Elmo.
Good to see you, bro.
You too. Long time no see.
Thanks for coming over. You're in Los Angeles.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I like you in Los Angeles.
I kind of like me here too.
You should consider it. You know, I feel like Daru Jones is so associated with New York, but then you move to Nashville and you're from Michigan, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes,
so
sir.
It's like, who even is this guy? This amoeba. He's just all over the country.
Man, I'm just thankful to be alive.
Well, you know what? You do Daru Jones no matter where you go, and it's really great. It always works.
I appreciate it. This is the first time in my career that I'm like, man, LA is vibing.
You know, I'll show you all the good restaurants. I'm sure you know a bunch of homies here already, but the food game is important.
Yeah, that's I've always known that too. Yeah, yep. Glad to in my current journey, you know, yeah, being plant based some days, vegan other days, and I still, you know, do some other things, not meat, but some other things.
There's a whole lot of that in LA. There's a whole pause. Lot of that in LA.
Major pause. Dang. Major pause. But yeah, I was telling Elmo, originally I came out here for the annual NAMM convention, the trade show that they have once a year.
Yep.
Glad it's back.
Yeah, yeah, we back. NAMM is back. People are there again.
Man, I don't want to veer off, but it was a wild story before the pandemic. We had just had that big NAMM, the big jam card.
We did a jam.
Jam jam joint.
We blew out NAMM with the biggest jam jam ever. I think we started COVID, honestly. I think it pretty much... We had Daru Jones on drums. Man, that was like the monster guitar one. We had Mateus Asado, Mark Lettieri, Nick West, Ari O'Neill, Kenny Wayne Shepherd. We had Nicole Rowe.
Yeah, that joint was epic.
We had Anna Karina. We had, oh God, if I'm forgetting someone now, it's bad. But then we had Daru Jones on drums.
I appreciate it.
Luke Holland on drums. Who else? Sean?
Oh, Sarah. Sarah.
Sarah Thauer, Sean Wright. Elmo Lovano. Yes, we're all on drums.
It was crazy. And, you know, we know what happened, you know, as the year progressed.
Yeah.
But we actually watched it, you know, come from, you know, overseas. We saw it in real time. But that was such a cool NAMM.
Yeah.
NAMM was thriving. All the drum companies were there.
Yes. Yeah. That was prime NAMM days. It was when NAMM was like, it was like high school reunion every year.
Yo.
And then it died.
Yeah, yo.
But that jam jam at NAMM, that was the only time we've ever done one at NAMM. We did it with Fender. We're our partners on that one. Big shouts to Fender.
Yes, sir.
And we, man, we blew that out, bro. We had like 2,000 people in that ballroom and the ballroom in the Marriott. We took that shit over. That was tight. We had everyone in the room.
That joint was dummy. I remember because I had some heroes of mine that were there. My good friend Dana Davis, he's a drummer from Detroit, Michigan. He played with the Whiners, a legendary drummer.
Oh, yes.
You say Dana Davis in the gospel community, people know who he is.
Oh, yeah.
But he was there. He was like, yo, he was bugging out. And I remember, you know, him, that was his first name, to my knowledge, that he's been to. So for him to come to that Jam Jam event, you know, that was really cool. But I was just grateful to be a part of that.
Man.
And, but yeah. Like I was telling Elmo earlier before I drifted off, you know, I came to NAMM because I missed the last couple of years. Last year, I was on tour with, actually 2022, I was on tour with Jack White to support what we were rehearsing for the tour that would start at the end of February.
Yep.
So I was on lockdown from the beginning of the year and I ended up missing it. And then last year I was still on tour with Jack White and we played at the Forum. They had the iHeart Festival with the Chili Peppers. We played right before the Chili Peppers.
Yeah.
But anyway, I missed the last 2 years. So I was like, man, I'm off. I want to come. So I remember going, and then it was just like you said, it was a reunion.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, and crazy, the DJ booths were popping. Like those booths, you know, a lot of the companies that I endorsed, they didn't really have like the bigger booths, like, you know, Remo and DW, which it was a little disappointing, but I'm glad I was able to go. And then after that, I went to the Grammy Awards.
Yeah, nice.
So it's always good to see it from that perspective, from an outsider. I played a couple Grammy events, and during the NAMM convention, I had met a lot of people. You know, that's, I always tell musicians, if you want to network, if you want to, you know, build relationships to try to get an endorsement or whatever the case may be, go to NAMM, because you're going to shake hands, you know what I'm saying, with people that work at these companies. And you're going to build new friends, you know,
absolutely,
in a community. And so when I went to NAMM, I went into the different sections that I normally wouldn't go in. Like I went into like the audio department with Sony and all these. And I met a lot of people, and it was like,
whole other building.
Yeah, that whole other building. You know what I'm saying? So I met a lot of people.
How long has this been here?
I'm not only a drummer, I produce, and I'm, you know, also into, you know, the sound engineering a little bit. And I met some people, and it was like, yo, if you were here, you know, after NAMM, come by the office.
Yeah.
And so, you know, after the Grammys, I was literally supposed to leave. I played a couple Grammy events. And, you know, some of those companies, it was like, yo, if you're here at this certain time, come by the office. So I ended up sticking around, and I just never left.
Nice. There it is. Stay, bro. Chill in LA. We got tons of space.
Man, it's been amazing. I've had some really... some dope recording sessions that came up. I went to Sony. I've been able to do some things. Also,
Sony's crazy out here,
bro.
Yeah, Sony is crazy.
The stuff you see on TV.
literally. Yeah.
Yo, I also went to Universal Studios for the first time. I've been seeing this on, you know, TV, and I was like, man, I feel cheated because I found out all the cheat codes for the movies. I didn't know. That was like, yo, I did the tour. Have you been to Universal?
You talking about the theme park?
Yeah, the theme park.
Oh, yeah, you did the tour. I did the tour. The backlot tour. Yeah.
And so I found out all the cheat codes. I'm thinking that people are you know, I don't know if this is going to be flagged, but I didn't realize all the reality shows, the different shows where, you know, I'm thinking this filmed in Atlanta, all these places, and it's done. I'm like, what?
It's in a studio in North Hollywood.
So I kind of feel slighted.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I also have to tell you something. I don't know, you probably learned this that day, but Jaws is not a real shark.
Yes!
I'm sorry to tell you. It's an animatronic shark. Before AI, actually. Way, Jaws was early.
Bro, it was...
OG Jaws.
Bro, it's so killing to see how they made the fake rain. You know, the rain.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, man, it's Hollywood.
Welcome to Hollywood, baby. Tyra Jones is here. It's all fake as fuck, bro. Oh, nothing is real.
I want to be a part of the real stuff.
Yeah. All right, go back to Nashville. You want real. Go to New York. No, I'm kidding.
But it was cool. It was cool to see how things are done. What really blew me away when I seen it was like when they do the Times Square or the New York scenes.
Yeah.
And you're thinking it's there and it's...
They got a whole New York built there. Yeah, it's crazy.
Man, I want my money back.
I'm sorry, bro. I'm telling you, LA's got everything. You don't even know what's real or fake. We got it all.
But yeah, you know, like I was saying, I came out here, you know, when I was originally supposed to leave at the Grammy, the Grammys, and I never left. So Elmo kidnapped me.
Welcome to LA, Daru Jones. Man, your SNL performance with Jack White was probably... That was like the video that I got texted the most.
No way.
From anyone in the world, like on Instagram, right? Like the DMs were going crazy. And I'm talking about non-drummers also, right? Like, of course, drummers are like, man, Daru, you know, Daru on Jack White again. Because you had stopped with Jack White and then you were back with Jack White when you did that performance.
Yes, sir.
And that was like the first one back, right? Yeah, because that was still pandemic.
Yeah,
and it was like,
still pandemic. Yes, sir.
It's like Daru's on SNL and he's with Jack White. But non-drummers, bro, the amount of non-drummers that sent it to me, including my mom or my dad, you know, and like that clip went around. I feel like the two most clips I've ever been sent in my life was like you on SNL and then the young baby boy drummer at NAMM.
Oh my God.
Those two clips are like the most where I'm like, cool, stop sending me this clip, right?
Wow.
And then the older lady now that plays on the pad. Okay, stop sending me drum clips. Okay, I've seen them. I see them. I have explored. Okay, I use the same Instagram you use. You don't need to send me these clips. But that performance of you at SNL was so amazing, man. Thank you. It was obviously a lot of people seeing you for the first time, and you're such a standout figure.
Appreciate it.
It's so hard to be unique and original, and you are.
Oh, man.
You are one of a kind, man. It's like Daru Jones, everyone knows it, whether they know you or that was their first time seeing you on SNL. You stand out immediately as your own individual.
Man, I appreciate it. I mean, I'm still learning. I'm still growing. And it's just something that I saw coming up, you know, when I got introduced to the Modern Drummer magazines and they were profiling, you know, Vinny and all of the people. Everybody had things that gave them their identity. And I always knew that one day I wanted to, you know, to develop and just... The example that I always give is Michael Jackson. He wore the leather jacket, you know, with the zippers, you know what I'm saying, and the glitter gloves. And you know, at that time when we first seen it as young people, we didn't really, you know, it was just like that was different.
Yeah.
Same with Prince, you know, rocking the stilettos. So, you know, I believe that, and they're deceased, so I can't speak on their behalf.
Yeah.
But I know they say image is everything. I just believe that they wanted to have something that could be associated, you know, with their brand or their likeness, whether they were in a room or not. You know, if you've seen, you know, I don't know, but I just wanted to have that, you know, being a musician. And you know, as kids, we do things that kids do. We have, you know, our superheroes, we want to be just like them. So I've done all of those things where, I emulated my heroes. And then I knew at some point I wanted to, you know, find a voice. And I always say, like, my style, if there is a style, it's just a combination of everybody that inspired me.
Yeah.
And I think what gave me my thing is like the gospel. I feel like something that you get in church that you don't get out of any other genre.
Yeah.
Like we're taught to learn how to play from the heart and soul and let the spirit take over.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the swagginess, it's a combination of a lot of things. It's definitely, I want to pay tribute to those that came before me, you know, Gene Krupa, Buddy Rich, you know, all of the Tony Williams, all of those people that I saw something that they did and I tried it at one point, and then I tried to make my own thing out of it.
Yeah.
And then up into the hip hop, you know, division, like Questlove, Amir, and
of course
the rock and roll, Bonham, all of those things.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I just came up I remember seeing how the people, the drummers especially, wanted to have their own, you know, something, you know, and coming and working in the hip hop world and the hip hop business. That's that was one of the rules. Like if you sounded like somebody else or you look like somebody else, you got called out.
Yeah.
Like back in the days, rappers didn't want to sound, they didn't want nobody else sounding like them.
Yeah.
They didn't want nobody else looking like them. Like everybody wanted to kind of, you know, be, you know, have their identity. So that stuck with me. So I knew that at some point. And when I started, you know, being like another hip hop drummer, outside of Amir, Questlove, you know, the upper echelon, because, you know, there's levels to this, as you know.
Of course.
And I was like, man, I remember when I started getting those opportunities to play with some of the bigger hip-hop artists, I downsized my drum kit. You know, I went from not needing the full five-piece that I was using when I was playing, like, the gospel into the jazz and other you know, other things that I would eventually, you know, started, learning about and playing. I noticed that Questlove only had a three-piece. He just had a snare, floor tom, and a kick drum.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I am playing this music, and I don't need to do, you know, at the hip-hop that I was playing, because, you know, hip-hop is evolved too.
Of course.
You know, a lot of people are, you know, people are adding a lot of more notes in a production.
With trap and trap, everything. Yeah,
of course. It's a whole different thing. So the hip-hop that the guys that I was playing for when I was emulating the producers, they were just, it was the Clyde Summerfield, Jabo, you know what I'm saying? The essence of, you know, just the loops, and you didn't hear a lot of fills. It was just snare, kick drum, and maybe a couple of fills.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was like, I just started using less drums, and I remember seeing Amir's drum kit, Questlove, in a magazine. I'm like, where's the rest of his drum kit? I was like, yo, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And then eventually, when I realized I didn't, you know, need all those other pieces, and then I had a small car.
Yeah.
And I remember at that time, I was doing multiple gigs in one day, and I had a small car. I was like, man, I need to just have something minimal so I can just break down quickly. And so I just eventually broke down to just just the snare drum four time. And I was like, man, I don't want to ever be in the same room as Questlove and he think I'm trying to bite his set, his configuration.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, what can I do to give me my own, you know, look, you know, because I think there's nothing wrong with being inspired, but I feel like it's, if you do be inspired, see if you can take what is done and do your own spin on it.
Yeah.
So that's what I wanted to do. So since I play traditional grip, as you know, there's two grips. There's the match grip. Obviously, it's the same grip on both sides. You know, the stick looks the same. Mm-hmm. And then there's the traditional, you know, where you see, the, you know, a lot of the jazz, like the Buddy Rich. The list goes on.
Yeah.
And, you know, even in the funk world, it's just a lot of drummers, you know, in a certain decade, they played that traditional. So I learned how to play traditional grip at an early age as a teenager. And I was like, I remember seeing those guys tilt the snare drum.
Yeah.
And eventually I started tilting the snare drum as well, just for, you know, comfortability. I was like, man, instead of tilting the snare drum sideways, I was like, let me just turn it where it looks like a hill going opposite.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and
then
the same thing with the floor time. I was like, man, what would happen if I just... So originally, my drum kit angling was just for looks, just so my kit wouldn't look like Questlove's drum kit.
Right.
Because I didn't want
to... Diversifying, making it special to you.
Exactly. And then I had to figure out how to play it.
Yeah.
I had to figure out how to play it. I changed my entire vocabulary.
So first it was just the snare drum flat down, and then the floor tom flat down, which no one had ever done.
Man. And then I wanted the cymbals, like, I wanted my drums to look like a furniture or like a car, like... I want everything to look neat. So the cymbals were like, you know, low, and I set really high. Like I wanted to dominate the kit.
Yeah.
And not so much to be seen, but I can see why people say that. You want everything low so things can be seen.
I've never thought that was the reason. I never thought that.
People said that. But I remember back in the days, like watching Vinny and Steve Smith and them cats, they set really low and the drums covered them. You didn't even know who was playing.
For sure.
Unless you've seen, you know,
Simon Phillips and shit.
It was hiding behind a kit. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, but they were killing.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, it's a new day. You know, but anyway, I set really high. I wanted to dominate and kind of give give command. And, I had to figure out how to play it. And for the most part, I had to be intentional.
Yeah.
Because I started adding more drums, not that much, but more. Like I added the rack tom, you know, in front of me. So like I had to, like, when I hit that tom, like it got to count.
Yeah, exactly.
Stuff is not
it's
easy
not
to get
there.
To.
It's not easy there. To get to.
So I'm in song.
And the tom, all right, dude. So I remember I've seen you play on your kit a bunch of times, of course.
Yes, sir.
And I remember I was at one of your shows one time, you and Marcus Machado.
Yes, sir.
And you called me up. You called me up to play.
Yes.
And I was like, on your kit? And then so I walked up and you handed me your sticks and I jumped up on your setup, like, you know, right after you were just playing on it. So I really felt like your energy in that kit, right? Okay. And like sitting high, which I don't do, sitting high. And then, I was like, how do I do this? And then the hi-hat was here, right? Mm-hmm. But then the snare is so low, and then the rack is, you have to lean. Like, you lean or you stand or whatever to hit it, right?
Yeah.
And then the floor, too. And I was like, man, how am I going to do this? And at first, because I play match grip, right?
Okay, yes, sir.
So at first, I was like, this does not work, right? So I switched to traditional. This does not work. This is not possible. I'm just going to be like, doom, doom. I'm just going to hit the rim the entire time. So I switched to match grip or to traditional grip.
Mm.
And I was playing with your band, with your ensemble, and I just unintentionally, whatever, started playing kind of like you, because I was like, what else am I going to do, right? Mm-hmm. I was like, all right, well, let me try to emulate Daru, right? Like, do my best. Like, and man, it was so fun.
Wow.
And when I stopped approaching the drums as I normally would approach it.
Yes, sir.
And then it was like, let me approach this in a new way. Now, of course, not ideal to have an audience in front of you and and Daru right next to you. Right. Be like, can we do this at my house? Maybe try it first or at the studio. So it took me, you know, 30 seconds. And then I acclimated to it. And then I loved it. And then I felt You know, I guess I had a piece of a feeling of what it's like to be you on a gig, or what it's like to be you. And I played differently. I played more behind the beat. You know, I played more like it did that. Cause even if it's just, if I'm used to hitting a snare here, but the snare's down here, it's going to be behind the beat.
Delayed.
It's going to be delayed automatically.
Oh man.
Automatically. And then the rack, right. Mm-hmm. Getting down to it. Cause it's even further down and further away. But man, it was so fun. I'll never forget that. I really felt like I was riding a roller coaster.
Yo.
And it was amazing. So thank you for letting me play on your setup and for calling me up on that.
Oh,
but
good. I mean, it's like a workout. You know, when you go to the gym, you're doing uncomfortable things to get your body tight.
And I even played the hat because I've watched you play so much, so I know that sometimes you hit the hat like this, like or like how you hit.
Yes.
It's like a
different side. Just different side.
I don't even know what that's the Daru grip. Like I don't know what you kind of go, you know, and you know, it's just like I don't know, man. It was fun, and I didn't sound like me, and it sounded better. But
You killed it. I mean,
it was cool to feel though. It was cool to experience.
No, I appreciate it. No, it's you know, like I said earlier, I'm not just a drummer. I'm a producer. So when I minimized my drum kit, I had to figure out how to get various sounds with minimal gear.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying. So with the snare drum, but not having you know a lot of racks or you know a lot of cymbal options, I was like, man, you know, you just look for ways to be creative.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? You look for ways to be creative. How many sounds can I get out of this snare drum?
For sure.
How many sounds can I get out of this floor tom? The same with it. So those different grips and the it's just like being an NPC. Like when you get the dip, when you're sampling drum packs or beat breaks, you're sampling a snare from Funky Drummer, a snare from Impeach the President, and you making beats. So I'm just thinking, how could I be that on the drum kit?
Yeah.
How to be an NPC, you know what I'm saying?
You have so many cool sounds, and I want to talk later about like all your signature products. You have so many signature drums and cymbals and effects and stuff, but we'll get to that. But
thank you.
To stay on this current like setup. And then, so you had this minimized drum set, like thinking, okay, Questlove has kick, snare, floor. How do I do that in my own way? And then, you know, bending them both facing down just off visual and then learning how to play and then adding cymbals.
It's like starting over again.
And now, so it's like you have that signature thing, but you have like with Jack White, you got a bigger kit
now. Yeah. No, I've definitely expanded even outside of Jack White. But even before that, like I was like, when I did the first kit with PDP Pacific via DW Drums, you know, the kit comes with a rack.
Yeah.
And so I was like, man, I need to be able to use all these pieces. So eventually I added the rack tom.
Yeah.
And I, you know, tilted, you know, slanted it down as well. And then eventually when I did the first Jack White tour, we had to learn at that time, I think it was over 60 tracks, almost 80 tracks of tunes. The last tour we did, it was like 100 tracks. We had a book. I know I'm going off topic.
No, it's okay.
But we had to learn the catalog from the Rack on Tours.
Yeah.
The White Stripes, Dead Weather. And some of those records, even the White Stripes, they had a marching snare drum sound. Mm. So Jack is a drummer.
Yeah.
So, you know, he wanted to be able to emulate some of those sounds. So I would add another snare drum, which was a marching drum. Then I added another rack tom, but I made it like a floor tom.
Yeah.
So it became two drums front and center, and then two on the side.
Yeah,
still angled down. But this last tour that I did with Jack, I was like, man, I've always been a fan of rock drummers because they had everything in the kitchen sink.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? They would have two, you know, Terry Bozzio, one example.
Yeah,
everything. You
the
know, what
biggest
I'm saying?
Example,
the biggest example ever in life. But I was like, yo, this time around, I want to have a rock and roll drum setup.
Yeah.
So I ordered everything, and I remember And on Jack's latest record, this is the first time, to my knowledge, that he's used samples.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like, now I had to incorporate Roland, the electronic, to do the samples, because, you know, it was just me. I didn't have anybody else. No percussion player. It was a minimal configuration, and I had to figure out how can I do all this stuff as a one man.
Yeah.
So I was like, I've already had the big 20, you know, six kick drum, big sizes.
Jeez.
Being a fan of like Bonham, you know what I'm saying, cats. Yeah. But I feel like rock dudes, they always have big drums.
Yeah.
you know, from what I've seen, rock drummers always have big drums, big cymbals, big everything.
Yeah, yeah.
But I definitely remember an era in gospel music or even in fusion, the hi-hats, everything was a lot smaller.
Yeah, yeah.
During the, you know, the Dave Weckl, you know, that era, the electric
the fusion,
band, fusion chick yeah, career. Yeah. Herbie, you know, they the hi-hats were like 13s.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
for sure.
13s. And even they had a lot of small, you know, small racks. And I remember every time when I would see the rock drummers, they would have these big sizes. So I was like, man, this is the first time I want to just get everything. So that last configuration, I call it the Rock Hop.
Nice.
Set up too. I'm actually using the pancake, the what they call it, a gong drum. And normally I was like, man, I don't know. I'm the type of person, like, if I see somebody do something, I want to do the opposite.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I was like, when people use that gong drum, it's always placed on you know,
out off to the side.
I was like, man, yeah. I don't want to do that. And so I was like, let me just figure out a place where I can put it at.
Put the shit right in the middle.
Yeah, right in the middle.
Take up a lot of real estate.
I just like put it in the middle, you know, and I just want, I really want my drums to look like a art, like a picture. Like when you, like when you go into like a museum, I want it to look like a museum piece. Like, you know,
it does. But yeah, when I first saw you post that kit, it did that to me. It stopped me in my tracks and I just stared at that setup. I was like, man, that looks like so much fun to play.
Thank you. And it brought back the Rototoms. You know what I'm saying? I remember getting exposed to the Rototoms at church and I was like, why do we have Rototoms at a church?
Yeah.
But it was just, when it came out, everybody had it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
eventually, you know, I was glad I was able to bring it out. And then with the electronics, so it was like, because we had to learn 100 songs or maybe more because Jack had, you know, released more material. It's no set list.
Yeah. Oh, it changes every day or just literally during the show, he just calls it out.
He calls it out or we got to be listening to what he's playing.
Really?
It's no set list.
Oh, he'll just start a riff.
He just start a riff.
No
and some,
way.
And sometimes we're making up stuff on stage. So every night is different.
There's never a set list.
Never set list.
Oh my God.
Now, the
dude.
Only difference between this last tour we did versus the other tours, because I did the Lazaretto and the Blunderbuss tour.
Yeah.
Like Jack, he just keeps taking it up to a next level. So our stage plot, we had a moving stage. So the first couple songs, the stage will move.
Yeah.
So that's the first time that we, for the most part, every show we played those two tracks from the album.
Yeah.
But everything else outside of that, those two tracks were off. We didn't know what was going to happen. It was like we had to be ready to play a Dead Weather track or Raconteurs or Stripes or a new song or a cover.
So you'll walk out on stage with Jack White and not know at all what the show's going to be.
No.
And then Jack will just start a riff.
Or
just say something in the mic.
Or he would just come whisper into either Dominic's ear or like
Dominic's a bass player.
He's a bass player.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He would come. Or we'd be listening to riffs and we'd be like, okay, we know where this is about to go.
Oh my God. Dude, that's amazing. That's so fun. That's like tip of your toes. You got to pay attention. That's how you never get bored on tour.
Yeah.
Like, never.
And it was like, it made it interesting, you know. And,
wow.
And it, like you said, kept us on our toes. And it was like, that show that you got, that was
it's a unique show.
Unique show.
Man.
Unique show.
So Jack White is just like tuned into the audience, feeling the energy. He's a magician. That dude's a magician.
Yo, let's go back to the Blunderbuss tour when he did the tour with the two bands.
Yeah, with the all male band and the all female band, right?
Yes,
so sick.
Yo, that was different from me because we got a text message or email in the morning on who was playing the show.
Wow.
So it was you know. Eventually, it became intense sometimes because, like, sometimes we would travel to a city and we're not playing the same venue for two, you know, it's not a double night show. And so, like, for Red Rocks, only one band can play that.
Right.
So if it's, like, one of those type of festivals that you've always wanted to play and then you get the email that you're not playing tonight.
You're bummed.
You're bummed. So that happened. That happened on that first tour. That actually the females got the opportunity to play Red Rocks.
Because whoever got the call for the whole show. You did the whole gig.
The whole gig.
So Jack would just in the morning be like, I'm feeling the guys tonight or I'm feeling the girls tonight. Dude. Unbelievable.
Sometimes he would just the bell band would do like a lot of days.
Yeah.
We do like three days.
Like 3 days in a row. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then he's like, but not Red Rocks. You're like, come on. I want Red Rocks, man. Come on, Jack. You're like, give the girls Boise. Give them Boise. Let me do Red Rocks.
But everybody was killing. Shout out to Carla Czar. She's an amazing drummer.
She's amazing.
Female, she was a female drummer in the Peacocks. They gave the band names, Peacocks and the Buzzards. But yeah, it was different. We were all the bands, we were all on the same bus. So it was that tour was different, but I'm glad that I had that experience.
I remember you guys did Jules Holland, right? With both bands.
Ooh.
Wasn't it like, right?
Yes.
I remember seeing that and being like, this is the craziest shit I ever seen. Because it was you on drums. And I remember, I don't think we were friends then. I was just a fan at that point. I was just like, Daru's the man. And I remember seeing you playing on Jules with the band and then going to the women band.
Yo.
And then back. And I was like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Listen, we're humans. You know what I'm saying? Everybody want to be the best.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know, guys, you have all guy band, all women band.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody want to be like, we come with the A game.
Yeah.
So it became a little, it came a little bit competitive. I won't say not in a bad way, but I don't know. But, you know, it's just one of those things, you know. It's like,
dude, that's a
like,
dynamic.
It's like, boss, we did a good job last night. Can we get the next night?
Yeah,
so
yeah,
it was like one of those.
Wow. Dude, no one else has had that experience before. That is for sure. You guys are for sure the only band to ever do that.
Yeah.
No one brings out two separate bands on one tour, whether or not it's all men in one and all women on the other. No one has two bands.
Yo.
And then having two bands, but it's like split like that, the energy that would come from that. There's going to be competition. There's going to be jealousy.
Bro.
Wow.
And so, and even another fact, I don't know if I don't know if Jack ever talked about this, but he wouldn't even, when we were rehearsing, we rehearsed for a month. He would not even allow us to see the female band. We rehearsed in two separate places.
He didn't want you to hear the influence or to even see what it was.
No. And so the female, the Peacocks, they rehearsed at Third Man.
Yeah.
And then the Buzzard, we rehearsed at Jack's home studio. And
wow.
Jack would like leave. He would rehearse with us for a couple hours. He would leave us and go drive the Third Man, rehearse with the Peacocks. Then he would drive back. He was just like, every day.
That's crazy. What made him do that?
He different.
He just had the idea. When you got the call to do that tour, did you know that it was going to be that?
No. So I remember when I recorded the music with Jack White in Nashville, it was through RZA cancellation. I originally got flown out to Nashville to record with Jack and RZA from Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah.
And RZA canceled at the last second. So, you know, Jack felt bad and he was like, I don't want to send you back to New York.
Hold on 1 second to take a step back. So before we go into Jack White and RZA and RZA not showing up and then you just doing a solo session with Jack White. What the fuck? How'd you even end up in that room? How did Jack White, like, how'd you get to get with Jack White to even get into that room with was supposed to be him and RZA?
Yeah, so I met Jack White through Black Milk.
Yep.
So I was Black Milk's touring and recording drummer at the time, and Jack White had started doing these two song singles.
Yep.
With people that, you know, that he was a fan of, and Jack White got a hold of Black Milk's music, and I think it's like one of the tracks that Black Milk have on his project is Album of the Year. That's the name of the project. It's a song called Deadly Medley, and it's had a rock guitar sample, features Royce 5'9". Shout out to the D fam. If I'm not mistaken, I think Jack White heard that track and got excited, and he invited Black Milk to come to Nashville to record, also do a performance at Third Man Records. Now, by me being in Black Milk's touring band, I gotta give Black his flowers because he didn't have to bring me to Nashville. Because Jack, you know, Jack is a drummer already,
yeah.
You know, but he was like, I think Jack offered to use Nashville musicians, but Black was like, no, I got my own guy. So
wow.
So Black brought me, Ab, and also Malik, who was playing in this tour band. We went to Nashville. Crazy story. During that time when I was playing with Black Milk, I was also playing with Talib Kweli,
yeah,
Brooklyn rapper. I was rotating Black Milk, Talib Kweli, Ski Beats,
mm-hmm.
who produced Reasonable Doubt, just amazing producer, a good
Absolutely.
Friend. He's done a lot of hit records. Also, Jay-Z Joplin. So my calendar was booked 6 months to a year in advance.
Yeah.
I missed the beginning part of that session because I had this, did a show with Talib Kweli. And so by me not making it, Jack ended up playing on the first track.
Mm. Wow.
Jack played on the first track, and then I got there to play it on the second track, which ended up being the single. The second track was Brain. That ended up being the first single. And I saw, shout out to Advanced Power, I saw them cut tape for the first time.
That's awesome.
We did like a 10-minute jam, and they cut it down to like 3 or 4 minutes. And I saw Vance. They listed a whole, it was crazy. But anyway.
That's awesome.
The second day outside of the session, we had a performance at Jack White's Third Man, which is, if you've never been to that place, it's a record store. They have a green screen performance room. It's super killing. So we performed in Jack White's in that room, the blue room.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a song that we play called Losing Out, where I take a drum solo. That song comes, I do the drum solo. I heard somebody go, yeah. And the next day I went back to New York. Our DJ at the time, Bill Sharp, he said that was Jack White. Jack White had got excited after you did that drum solo. Like a week or two later, somebody from his team reached out to me and it was like, man, Jack is doing a collaboration with RZA and he wants you to come down.
Sick.
Want me to come down. So I went to Nashville. I was excited because RZA is one of my heroes as being, producer.
For sure. Wu-Tang
Clan hits. And so I was like, yeah, dope. I get to go here. So I made it to Nashville, got excited, got right to the studio and Jack left. I guess he got the phone call. He was like, right before we was about to start, he left out to get the phone call. And when he came back in the room, he, had his head, not head down, but he was just like, not in good spirits. He's like, man, I'm sorry to tell you, but RZA canceled. It was me in that session, little Jack LJ from that plays with Jack other projects.
Yep.
And so Jack was like, man, I don't want to send you back to New York, but I got a couple solo songs I've been working on. So we worked for 2 days just recording solo material.
Wow.
We did like 4 tracks in 2 days, and the rest of that year goes by. And at the end of 2011, I was like, man, I wonder whatever happened to that music. And then I get an email from Jack's team that he was inquiring about my availability for like 8 months. And I'm like, and I told his team, I was like, well, I got a couple tours I'm trying to decide on what I want to do, because Talib Kweli had just released a record called Gutter Rainbows, which I played on one of the tracks, and Talib was scheduling a tour, and then Black Milk had a tour that he was scheduling at the same time.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to pick which one.
What's going
to
happen?
To make a long story short, I mentioned that to Jack's team, and then Jack emailed me personally, and he was like, those songs you played on are going to be on my solo record Blunderbuss that's coming out. I have this vision of touring with 2 bands of everybody that was involved in the project. So originally, the female band, a lot of them played on the record.
Yeah.
And I played on the record. So he just had this vision of doing the 2 bands.
Nice.
So that's how that happened.
Wow.
I'm a loyal person, so I almost didn't even do it.
Right.
My loyalty to Black Milk. But my girlfriend at the time in New York, she was like, yo, what are you doing?
Do the Jack White gig, bro.
It's a lot of factors that played into how that happened. I don't have to, share it on this podcast. But anyway, I ended up doing the Jack White tour. And the crazy thing was we had to go off radar. So while we were rehearsing, people were like, I wasn't doing any Talib Kweli shows or Black Milk shows. The first time they saw me play again was on SNL.
Yeah.
2012. And I think it was in March. And then I was like, that's where Daru went.
That's awesome.
So the secret, came out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we both bands played, a song apiece on SNL. And that was, I've always wanted to play on that show. So it was a blessing, to be able to do that. So the cancellation, wow. The RZA cancellation turned into being a blessing for my career.
Yeah.
And I feel like, if you pay your dues and you keep working, opportunities will come. And I just believe the creator, has something bigger than in store that I didn't even realize that was going
to. It led to you being on the actual Jack White album and then doing the tour. And then, now you've done multiple tours with Jack. Here we are in 2024. It's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you.
And it's so cool. You on that gig is amazing, bro.
Man,
it's so cool.
It's crazy.
I'm sure he loves having you on the gig. Bro, it seems like he feeds off your energy so much, or you guys feed together.
I appreciate it. I was a little, not nervous, but I was a little like, man, because he's a dope drummer.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what do I do? And normally, because I would get hired to do MD, music director jobs, yeah. one of the reputations I was able to make for myself was people like, yo, you know, Daru, he pays attention to detail. If you give him your music, he's going to learn it just like the record. So yeah. When I would hire guys, you know, I would make sure. So I built up that reputation. So when it came to getting the opportunity, I was like, okay, I know I need to learn all of Meg Wright beats.
Yeah,
you know
what I'm saying?
And as y'all know, she's not the most technical drummer. But I love what she did. Like, it's super killing. Like, I feel like it reminds me of hip-hop. Like Dilla meets rock and roll. But it stuff is killing. So, you know, just learning the catalog, I was like, okay, I want to learn how to play these beats.
Yeah,
like that's on the record. But when we our first rehearsal, Jack was like, "Yo, I don't even want to play the music like we did it."
Yeah,
because when we were playing the White Stripes stuff, it was just a 2-piece.
Yeah,
but our band was a 5-piece, so we had to figure out how to add other musical elements to just a 2-piece equation
for sure.
So I made the decision of sticking with the original beats that Meg played because I know that's what the audience want to see.
Yeah, for sure.
When you go to them concerts, they don't want to hear, you know, they
those are parts that everyone knows.
They
want
to hear Seven Nation Army.
Exactly. They're just like, keep it. Dun. Has Meg White seen you play with Jack White?
I don't know, but I would love to meet her one day.
Oh, you haven't met her?
I haven't even met her. But I'm definitely a fan. I would say those first couple tours that I did with Jack, the Blunderbuss tour and the Lazzarato tour, which I played on that track, I was super, you know, I played the beats, but then I found a way to bring my own sauce in, what I'm saying? And the last tour that we did, I made it a conscious effort to stick with trying to play the original pockets.
Yes.
Like those albums and also bring in some flavors, but not as much.
For sure.
Those first couple tours, I was just kind of like, I was wilding out. I was playing it, but I was like really sometimes not even, I was like playing a different, not time signature, but against it, you know, I do when I'm playing with the DJ. But yeah, I respect Jack because obviously he was like, I brought you in because I want you to bring your world to what I'm doing. So that don't happen every day.
Yes.
That does not happen every day. When you get a job, you know, most of the time, like a regular 9-to-5, you're there. The boss got the vision and you're there to you know, to do whatever their mission is and just help their ship or whatever they got going on. But Jack was like, you know, I feel like he wanted me to bring because of what I've done in the hip hop community. And he's a hip hop dude. We had the same taste of music. I know there's some stuff that you know, that happened, but Jack is a hip hop head. We like Wu-Tang, Tribe Called Quest. Yeah. We're listening to that stuff before we go on stage.
Nice. I love that.
So I'm just grateful that I was able to be myself.
Yeah.
And bring all of the things that inspired me to that stage. And I feel like rock and roll music is an expression. You can really, you know, let out all of the anger with it.
For sure. Oh, I see.
Aggression.
You stand
it's
up.
It's like a workout.
You're getting, like, you're bringing the energy.
Thank you. I mean, shout out to Gene Krupa and those drummers that were very, you know, had that showmanship. And I've learned that at a young age, and I wanted to become the drum. That's why I tell people I become the drum.
Nice.
So when I'm doing that stuff, it's not a gimmick. It's like, that's what I'm feeling at that moment. And I want the audience to feel.
Oh, it's happening.
You know, to feel that.
We're definitely feeling it.
Thank you.
Meg White, reach out to us. You know, put in the comments what you think, what you think of Daru Jones on drums.
Come on, Elmo, come on a podcast.
Hey, Meg White, come through on the podcast. Let's talk all about it. I love it. I'm a fan. Let's go. Okay, so we keep hearing ding. Okay, so if you're wondering, if you're listening to the audio version of this podcast, Daru is wearing 2 cymbals. Okay, occasionally he's pulling a marching band on here. And it sounded better when it was accidental. Or was it? There it is. Do it in the mic.
That sound like the when you got your iPhone or the notifications.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just, every time that happens, I'm like, is Daru checking his emails? Daru keeps checking his emails during the interview.
I want to give a shout out to all the drummers that Jack White played with. Patrick. Woo. Patrick, man. Beats.
Man.
Patrick and Carla, you know, and it's just great to, you know, to be. And Jack is a drummer. Killing drummer, so I'm just grateful to be. Whenever he decides to record or do any shows that, you know, I get axed. I'm on the list because he don't have to, you know, the list is already full.
Yeah. That's great, dude. I'm sure he likes to sit on your kid at soundcheck probably and feel that shit, that upside down.
Yo, I actually caught him a couple times on their last tour. I recorded him and he played the kid and he was killing.
Nice.
He's killing, man. He's a fan. Like, I remember the first time when we rehearsed, we went out for a band and it was just a male band. And I remember it was me, Dominic Davis, and Ruby. Actually, Ruby came with us. And I remember we were eating, and Jack asked me a question. He was like, who were some of the drummers you were checking out as a kid? And I think this is what gave him an impression. I was like, well, my mom bought me Terry Bozzio solo drums. And he could not believe that I knew who Terry Bozzio was. And he was just like... I think Dominic Davis said when they dropped me off, Jack was like, "Yeah, this is gonna be."
That's awesome. God. That's awesome.
Yeah. So shout out to Terry Bozzio and Vinny. You know all the Zappa drummers. Like I got in a lot of trouble trying to play that stuff in church.
Oh my god, dude. Oh my god.
Because the gospel was not like it is now.
Yeah.
It was more, you know, playing pocket and more dancing, like house music. Like that consistent loop. But now, you know, gospel is a lot more produced and a lot more notes and
Like,
it's like jazz gospel.
We're lucky enough to both be friends with Vinny Caliuta.
Ooh, shout out to our brother Vince.
Love you, Vinny.
Love you, Vinny. And it's a funny story. I remember meeting Elmo at NAMM with our friend Tao. And
oh,
I remember
Tal Wilkenfeld.
Tal, she was like, "Yo, you gotta meet Elmo. He's about to start this thing. This is right before you started it.
And
look what happened.
Yeah,
it all happened.
It's crazy, man.
She hooked me up with you before, and she was like, "Yo, I got to get you hooked up with Elmo." And it's crazy just to see that it. Yo, shout out. Big respect to what you've done, bro.
Thanks, man.
For us musicians, like being, you know, being a catalyst, you know, because as you know, at least for drummers, sometimes we get the low end of the stick.
Yeah.
So I know that you're going to have our back. Whatever you're working on,
drummers at the top, baby. Drummers always at the top.
It's always like, yo, can you do this show and we give you a chicken dinner?
Yeah.
Yo.
Yeah, man. And shouts to Tal Wilkenfeld, my sis. And thanks for introducing us.
Yes.
I remember. I have a photo of you, me, and her from that day.
Crazy.
Yeah, I remember that.
Crazy. Now Elmo's done movies. Jam, all international.
Oh, yeah.
I mean.
Just trying things.
Man, records.
Just having fun.
It's so cool to be in the space and just be there. And it's just really cool that, you know, to have a brotherhood with this gentleman, you know, as a kind, gracious, and Leo Gang. It's Leo Gang every day. We know there's other...
There are other signs. You know, it's funny. You went like this for Leo Gang. So I have a photo. I have a photo of Quincy Jones and I. I was with Quincy. And Quincy always comments on me being a Leo, right? He's always like, that's why you're the leader, man, because you're a Leo. Ooh. Leos are the leaders. And Quincy always says that to me. I don't know if you ever met Quincy, but one of his first questions is always like, what's your sign?
Wow.
Quincy's super into Zodiac.
Okay.
He's super into Zodiac. So anyways, I have this one photo of him where we went, a photographer went to take a photo of us, and Quincy was like, let's give him the L, right? Like, that's a horrible Quincy impression. It does not sound like him at all, but he was like, let's give him the L, man. So Quincy and I are both like this. We're like, it looks like we're both just giving the loser sign. Like, we're both looking at the camera, dang. Just like, we'll share the photo. But I remember when we took the photo, I was like, maybe we shouldn't do the L.
Oh, man.
Maybe we do a W for winners.
Or Wu-Tang.
Wu-Tang or something.
Wu-Tang for the kids.
Yeah. Big shout to Quincy Jones.
Yeah, salute. And, I met him one time overseas during the jazz festival they had. I was playing, doing a set with Logic, DJ Logic. Shout out to Logic. And he was there. Miss Hill was there.
Amazing.
And yeah, it was like, man, that's the guy right there. We might be related. The Jones, you know. But
come on, yeah.
maybe down.
Yeah.
But yeah, shout out to
you
Quincy.
Could be one of his kids.
Thanks.
Dang. Quincy's got a lot of kids.
Man. But yeah, big shout out to Quincy. And when I saw that he was a catalyst for joining you, I was like, that's the stamp.
Man.
Stamps.
That was a game changer.
Stamps, bro.
Yeah, Quincy's the man.
How did you feel about that? Like,
dude, about Quincy Jones investing in Jamcard? Yeah, my God, bro. Yeah. What was crazy was I remember the first thing that happened that tripped me out before Quincy invested in Jamcard. Mm-hmm. He followed us on Instagram. Like, jeez. All of a sudden, Christian, do you remember that? We were working, and wow. All of a sudden, I got the notification on my phone. I don't know. I just opened up Instagram, and it was like, Quincy Jones followed Jamcard. Wow. And I was like, what? What? And I remember I ran through the house. We have a video. I think someone took a video of me, like, maybe you did.
Wow.
But like I'm like laying on the floor. I'm like, Quincy Jones just followed us.
Wow.
On Instagram. And so that was even crazy. Just him just knowing, be like, man, he's hip to our shit. Like, wow. This was like, and this was 2017. Mm. Like, this was like the year Jamcard came out, you know, like, and then 2018, we raised our first like $1 million round. And Quincy invested. And joined our advisory board.
Wow.
And I remember, to me, man, I mean, that was a trip. The whole thing was a trip. The whole process, like meeting Quincy, getting his support. Quincy has an amazing team. Big shouts to Adam Fell and Tomas and like the whole Quincy Jones production team who managed Jacob Collier and everything. They like run the operations, you know,
Yes, sir.
So big shouts to those guys. And we're close friends now. We've been friends for years and everything. But yeah, Quincy's support was just, it was so mind blowing. And then I remember the craziest thing, I think what hit me the hardest was when Quincy invested. So, you know, he like, you know, wired me money, right? So that's like, that's cool.
Dang.
I'll take Quincy's money. But the thing that was cooler.
Sin space.
Was... when he signed the contract, the investment agreement, all of a sudden I looked at it and I was like, I have Quincy Jones's autograph.
Yeah, that's crazy. Major head crackings.
But this
crazy.
Is an autograph that's tied to dollars and his belief and support in me as an entrepreneur, which was just like a game changer. Because, you know, what's cool about that is I think on this entrepreneurial journey, so much of it is you believing in yourself.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Right?
Yes, sir.
Like,
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And, you know, especially in the early days, whenever you're starting something new, whether you're starting as a drummer or you're touring for the first time, or you're used to hip hop and now you're in rock, or you're starting a company, you're starting. For me, I had like a career in drums and now I'm starting a tech company. I was fish out of water, man. I had no friends in tech. So I was like super uncomfortable at first. Wow. Like, what do I do here? Right. Mm-hmm. So, the biggest thing that Quincy did to me was him believing in me and investing in Jamcard just made me believe in myself.
That's amazing. That's
even more.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And then that goes so far. Like, believing in yourself is the most important thing. And it's...
And stepping out on faith.
Stepping out on faith, absolutely. Which I had to do to start Jamcard because I was, you know, making my living as a drummer. I was making a good living. Like,
was killing.
I was still killing. I had, you know, thank you. I had... luckily plenty of work, you know,
I was
like, man, I'm good. Like, I could just keep doing this, but I really wanted to start Jamcard and I had to step out on a limb and risk it all to start this thing. I had no idea how to do. Mm-hmm. And that was a whole rough journey. And now it's great, but it was crazy.
I can only imagine, but you know, you stuck it through, you know, and it's a part of your story, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And when you do the recaps, you know what I'm saying? Like the 5-year or 10-year recaps, you'll be like, man.
Oh, man.
You'll be glad that you at least tried.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know, that's a part of, you know, my journey has been always, it feels like the creator will allow me to go through the back door. Like,
I've
never been the straight shot.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm grateful that
there is no straight shot. There is no straight shot. That's why it's the same as like looking at the stock market, right? It's just like, if you span it out over 10 years, you just see this. Right. Yeah, but if you're looking at it all close, you're in it, you're week by week, day by day, it's fucking up and down and up and down and up and down.
It just seems like back in the days, if you had skills, if you were dope, that you would, you know, it would be easy, but that's not even the thing. You can have all the skills ever and be dope and you still, you know, it's just like a lot of dudes. You know, we came up at a time you had to pay, you had to meet the person to get to the next person, to get to the next person. He was like moving up.
You got to pay your dues. We're still paying dues.
Still paying dues. Yes, sir.
Still paying
yes,
dues right yes, now, yes, and sir. We still have a ton of future in front of us, yes, man, sir. Of amazing yes, things that haven't opened yet.
Yes, sir.
You know, it's like it's exciting to think about. Like, yes. Who knows where we're going to be in 10 years?
Yes, that's true.
You know, like, yeah. Man.
But yeah, it was just that factor, but just staying faithful and, you know, that's yeah. been helpful to my career. Staying faithful.
Perseverance.
And just yeah. when you have a mission, just continuing it, regardless of what's happening around you.
Yeah.
Because like, even with the way that I play drums and the setup and all of the things, and even being an entrepreneur with Ruzic Records.
Yeah.
You know, when you first started it, you know, it's not, you know, trying to get people to subscribe or yeah. understand.
Yeah.
When you're a head thinker, sometimes it can be frustrating.
Yeah.
It can be frustrating. But when people catch up, when they catch up, if you stay consistent, the payout for that is just like some people they give up right before, you know what I'm saying, that yep. breakthrough.
Exactly. You never know what's tomorrow. Never give up. And like, look at your, even just in, just to only narrow in on Black Milk into Jack White, you wouldn't think that Black Milk would lead to you being on Jack White, right? No. So you can't even guess what this world has for you and what God has for you and like yes. all this stuff, man. Like you missed the first session because Talib had a thing. So now you missed the first day. Now Jack does this. Then you end up doing the second day. Okay, great. Oh, I'm going to do this gig with the RZA. Oh man, RZA doesn't show up, man. I'm bummed. That's okay. Now you're going to do the solo album for Jack, and now you're in Jack's band, right?
Man, like, I'm a believer. I'm definitely a believer, and I believe that as long as I stay grounded and remember the things that I was taught yeah. coming up, you know, coming up in church, yeah. and the Creator's been very good, yeah. even and very merciful. Even when I didn't, you know, feel like sometimes we feel like we don't deserve things, yeah. but He's just been so faithful and just showing me, you know, that if you believe and you do certain things, you know, he have my back. And I'm just even stuff that I didn't understand. Like
yeah.
when you're sowing seeds, sometimes that's you don't even, you'd be like, man, well, I got to put this in and yeah, I'm not yeah. in the return. It's not, the return is not the same, but
for sure.
The thing that you get in return, you can't pay for that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That Quincy Jones look, can't pay for that. You know what I'm saying? Like,
man. Yeah.
So just staying faithful and just believing in yourself, staying faithful and just staying on that road regardless of what's happening around you.
Yeah.
And that's been my journey. Like, fads would come out, you know, people would start doing whatever was popular at the time.
Yep.
And I just like, nah, I like this boom bap. I like the, you know, the Bernard Purdy, you know, just yeah. a certain, and now, you know, it's becoming It's a thing. It's yeah. a thing. But
oh,
it's,
absolutely.
I just remember just sticking with it and just not going with whatever the fads. And I've always, if I see somebody doing something, I want to do the opposite.
Yeah.
You know, I just, you know, I don't know. Just kind of been that way.
But, I know. Well, when you walked in, you were wearing all black and then you saw my outfit. You saw my outfit and then you went to the bathroom and came out looking like this. Like, all right, bro, I get the point, man. You're dedicated. You're different. No.
But at the end of the day, the bigger picture is I just want to continue to be a vessel and show God's
oh, yeah.
love, you know, through me on stage and off stage.
Amen.
Use man. What I have to show His love. And
yes.
That's whether going to these different communities, being a support. I'm a collaborator. You know what I'm saying? I like collaborating and just allowing Him to, you know, to use, you know, me as a vessel. So that's my journey and my mission with everything that I'm doing on and off stage. I'm not perfect, you know, I make mistakes too, but that's my overall, I feel like that's, and that's why I feel like a lot of doors, you know, yeah. open and different things happen.
Amazing.
As long as I stay obedient and do that.
Oh yeah.
And stay prayerful. I feel like, you know, it ain't broke. It's not broke.
Just keep going, baby. Keep going. Just keep going, baby. Okay. I understand your uniqueness. But like, man, you got really great style. Like, oh, I can't man. Do that. I've tried. It doesn't look good on me. But where does your style come from? And also, I'll see you on tour. And I see you, and then you're wearing all sorts of different things all the time on tour. And I'm like, how do you pack so much in your suitcases? Because when man. I go on tour, I can't bring that much variety. But Dal Ru brings so much variety on tour. I'm like, this guy must be the best packer. Like, ever.
Ooh, man. I could say the hip-hop days was the training days for me. Because, you know, the hip-hop world, that was the aesthetic, fashion.
Yeah.
You know, growing up, being a fan of the Source magazine vibe and all the things that were out. Word up, now I'm telling my age, but just the fashion was just so. Sometimes I didn't even care about the music. They just looked dope, and that made me want to check the music out. Yeah. So, as a kid, that's what gravitated. My dad was. I tell people that he was the best dressed person that I knew.
That's awesome.
And just growing up in church, they say you should look your best. It's not always getting expensive things, but just taking what you have and look clean.
Yeah,
and look your best. So that stuck with me. But just like my dad, he was just suits, you know what I'm saying? He was like, so, you know, I feel like my style and what I do is a contribute, you know, to him. And rest, you know, he's passed on, so rest in peace. But yeah, just the hip hop world is definitely influential on my style, my dress style. Like, cross colors, taking chances on wearing jeans backwards, all those things.
Yeah.
I saw that, you know what I'm saying? And images, everything. So that's definitely a part of my aesthetic. And like I said, my style is a combination of things that I saw, and I just try to put my own spin on it. But I give shout out and praise to the people that done it before me, like EPMD, LL wearing the Kangols, you know what I'm saying? That's what got me excited about
the
music.
You were on the Kangols for a long time.
For a minute. Shout out to Kango. I've been an ambassador since 2012.
Nice.
Over 10 years. Just the whole fashion, like seeing that, you know, coming up in a church. Easter Sunday was a thing.
Yeah.
You know, that was a thing. You know, you want to go come, you know, say your Easter speech with your best outfit on.
Yeah.
But no judgments, because I've seen people, you can go anywhere. It's the... That.
I know.
I should take the heat song.
You can hear the swag. You can hear it.
But yo, and it. Damn.
And this necklace is awesome.
Thank you.
Where do you get that necklace?
Man, it's a Ghana piece.
Wow.
But yeah, so.
Beautiful.
Thank you. So in the hip hop world, it was all about the gear and also the accessories.
Yeah.
They would wear the knuckle, you know, it was a whole presentation.
Yeah.
So that stuck with me. I wanted to bring that into drumming.
Yeah.
You know, to any styles of drumming, you know, whether it was gospel, soul. I started, you know, playing with John B. I was in this East Coast band, but just. I wanted to be a John Rabini drummer, so I wanted to bring that fashion into everything that I was doing. And more so, working in the hip-hop world for over a decade, you know, I learned when I would do those tours, you know, you want to look fresh every night. You know what I'm saying? And I remember when I was in Ski Beats' band, the Senseis, shout out to Ski, also Dame Dash.
Yeah.
He had a gallery in New York called DD172. Big shout out to Dame Dash. He's a good friend of mine, a brother. I still stay in touch with him. I remember Dame had a relationship with Adidas. Mm. And the guy, his name was John Wexler. This is before Pharrell. This is before Ye's, before all of the bigger people that would come on board as an ambassador. Not before Run DMC, obviously, but like the late, like 2009, 2008, Dame Dash had a relationship with John Wexler, and he invited John to come to New York. And by me playing with Ski Beats, I was in a house band called the Senseis. It was me and Brady Watt. Shout out to Brady Watt. That's my brother doing his thing. That's my guy. We played in the band together. And shout out to John Cave, who was a guitarist. He passed away. All the artists that would come. So with that, during that time, we were the next, like, Rockefeller.
Yeah.
Rockefeller was, you know, Jay-Z, Kanye, Benny Siegel. That Dame moved on, and we were, like, the next generation. And he had a label called Black Rock.
Mm.
Or Blue Rock.
Blue Rock.
And it's spelled B-U-B-L-U Rock. And so I played in a house band. So anybody that came to the studio, Smoke Dizza, Currency, Styli, we were the house band, you know, for that group. So Dan would have these events in the basement. It was under 100. That means only 100 people can fit in this basement.
Sick.
So he would do these performances, and John Wexler came down from Adidas, and Adidas would sponsor the events. They would give us shoes and gear. So I met John, and I built a relationship with him. Relationships are everything in life.
Yeah.
On all levels. So I was building with John Wexler. I was like, hey, I don't not only play in this scenario, I also play with Talib Kweli, also Black Milk. So he seen that I was very proactive and moving around. So I would eventually build a relationship with John Wexler. So Adidas was sending me gear for like a decade. You know what I'm saying? So I learned how to pack my clothes on those tours because, you know, in hip hop, you want to look fresh every night.
Yeah.
So eventually I figured out how to downsize later on. But yeah, I just learned how to different clothing on those hip hop tours, just trying to be fresh.
So when you pack, are you folding or do you do the roll?
I was doing the rolls,
the rolls.
Roll ups.
You got to do the rolls.
Fruit roll ups.
Yeah, you got to do the rolls. You don't want no wrinkles. You know,
but yeah,
I wonder how to maximize my suitcase. I need to. You should do a whole packing course.
Yo, I figured out how to, you know, how to get the wraps. I mean, the rolls up, the roll ups on the clothes, and then the sneakers.
The sneakers take up so much space. Yeah.
So you know what? I was the guy that had more bags than everybody on.
I figured. Yeah.
A couple bags.
Yeah. I figured.
But yeah, I mean. I wanted that to be a part of my aesthetic. You know, when I come to the show, that's why the rates are what they are, because I'm not just coming to play. I'm coming with, you know, looking a certain, you know, I know it's a part of our job, but it's just bringing so much to the table.
Absolutely.
Because if we look good, we're making you look good.
For sure.
You
comes
know.
With it.
So anyway, that's what helped my packing and the Steve's. And I had to figure out how to downsize, because like, it would take so long trying to figure out how to pack and what to take on the tour.
I can imagine.
Because you got hats.
Yeah, I know.
First you got the gear.
You don't want to crush the hats.
Then you got, yeah.
The shoes are taking up all the space.
Exactly.
You got jackets. Oh, man.
And then when you're touring overseas, sometimes they're in different seasons.
Yeah.
So you got to figure out what the season is.
That's so hard.
It's so hard.
You're playing in Sweden, it's freezing, and then you go to Italy and it's hot as shit. You're like, oh, God, what do I do?
Yeah, so I had to like take something, you know, just in case. I had to take a winter jacket or something.
Yep.
So it was difficult. Then eventually I would figure out how to downsize. And then I think this last Jackpot tour, I kind of figured out how to make my jeans stretch.
Gotta be real. Gotta be real creative.
And just pack a lot of shirts.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And maybe wear the jeans, you know, just a couple jeans. But then the hats and accessories, and had to figure out like how to not bring so many shoes. So it took a while. But
you're going on the flight wearing three jackets, got four hats on. Be like, nah, this is how I dress on the flight.
Man. But yeah, just that whole hip hop is definitely it was inspiring for my aesthetic.
There's a whole bunk on the tour bus just for Daru's closet. Daru's junk bunk.
Yo.
Closet.
Yo, I heard Busta Rhymes used to have a whole like semi a bus full of, because you know Busta Rhymes, he was flamboyant for years. With the wares. Like, man, but
even now he's decked out in suits and everything. He's always decked out. Yeah,
yo. But yeah, just definitely shout out to the hip hop being an influence on how I dress, and just trying to figure out how to keep evolving. You know, trends come, you know, things are hot. Adidas had a run, and you know, now Puma and other companies are coming around. New Balance, which I never thought I would be wearing New Balance, New Balance is like
super hot now.
It's killing.
Yeah.
Dad shoes.
Yeah, for sure.
Pop shoes.
Maybe we're just older. Could just be that, Daru.
Dang, son.
No, I'm just kidding.
Nah, shout out to all the companies. It's cool. You know, everybody, you know, have a rum, and I'm just grateful to know these companies and sometimes get pieces, you know, from them.
For sure.
When needed.
Yep. Lace us up, guys. Hit us up in the comments.
We need to
DM
get the jam
us.
Card
some
swag
free shit. Let's get some swag. Hey, so you got a custom drum set. You got your PDP, Daru Jones, New Yorker drum kit.
Yes, sir.
I have the bald man percussion,
yes, sir.
Trash stack thing, hi-hat thing.
Yes,
you got sticks. You get so many custom things, bro. Man. Like you have more than I feel like most, definitely more than most drummers, if not all drummers.
Man.
So for example, with the DW kit, for you to make your own custom kit, because it's one thing to make a custom kit. Like I have a custom kit, but mine's not for sale at Guitar Center, right?
Mm.
So like for you to get that, how does a deal like that come about with DW?
That's a good question. As you know, companies are going against each other.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? This company want to be the best. They all finding out what is popular, what's selling the most. So how can we make something to compete that?
Yep.
So, you know, there's companies that have things, you know, not to go into names. But shout out to Amir Questlove, because I remember seeing him come out with the breakbeats. And that was super killing.
Like, yeah,
that
yeah,
was,
yeah.
You know, especially, you know, not saying, but another, you know, he's black, you know what I'm saying? But being able to have that signature kit, that's big for our community and just in general. Just a drummer, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That played the music that we play, like that was encouraging. I remember wanting to do the same thing. It was a company that I played called Tay Drums.
I remember Tay.
And Tay had this kit called the Go Kit. And I love that kit. I used that kit at Rock the Bells. I used it at a lot of different shows and settings. And I wanted to do a custom kit with them.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen at that time. This was before the breakbeats came out.
Right.
And so I remember talking to the guy, one of the A&Rs. I was like, man, you know, I was like, I'm working with Talib Kweli, just, you know,
hyping him up.
You know, because it's the thing I tell like drummers, you never know. They have to sign somebody, you know what I'm saying? So if you're hot, if you're doing your thing, you might just be up for an endorsement, you know, so you just never know. And at that time, I feel like when I was trying to get bigger endorsements, I feel like they were only signing like the rock, certain genre dudes. Yeah. That's why I was like, man, I'm playing with one of the best hip hop guys. So it has to be somebody that know about that works for the company, that know about these names and know the value.
For sure.
You know, but anyway, that thing didn't happen with Tay Drums. And then I when I started working with Jack White, I was like, man, I need to upgrade my stuff my gear.
Yeah.
You know, I want to, you know, move on. And I remember it was other companies that I played through years that I wanted endorsements with, but it didn't happen. I remember being a huge fan of Yamaha. I played Yamaha as a kid for years, you know, and the Stage Custom scene, Weckl, of course. I love Yamaha. And then eventually being a fan of our brother Benny Caliuta with the Gretsch, and also Tony Williams.
Yeah.
Was, you know, fan of him as well, coming up as a teenager. I remember Gretsch actually made the drums on the first tour, the top of the tour, the Blunderbuss tour with Jack White.
Oh, really?
And I tried to get an endorsement with them then.
And they wouldn't do it?
No.
What? Who wouldn't endorse you? That's so crazy.
I mean, there's a lot of people out there doing their thing, but crazy thing. I remember I had another friend that worked for Mono Creators.
Mm-hmm.
They were called Mono at first.
Yep.
They make the bags.
Yep. I got a Mono bag. Yeah.
My good friend Daniel Kushner, he was like, man, I know this cat at DW, Scott Donnell. Let me put you.
And Scott's
like,
great.
I told Daniel, I was like, I'm about to go on Jack White. You can't tell nobody. Like, this is under wraps. So I'm trying to upgrade all my equipment. So who do you think I should to get with? I've always been a fan of DW drums because I remember back in the days getting the VHS tapes, you know, of the product tapes, you know, showing all of the different stuff that they were putting out with the colors. I think I'm really telling my age. But yeah, it was like that was one of the only companies that I knew that was doing that.
Yeah.
Putting out like product tapes.
Yeah.
So, you know, Daniel shot an email to Scott Donnell and Scott was like, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
So they DW signed me. And then in the middle of the first part of Jack White tour, Scott was like, I'm going to build you a drum kit. He didn't even show me pictures. I just sent him the color scheme. I said, we're wearing blue on stage. So I didn't even see the kit. We took a big chance because basically after the kit was built, he was like, I'm going to just mail it to you. So in the middle of the tour, we get this kit from DW mailed while we were in New York. And the kit was so killing.
Yeah.
It went to my apartment in New York. And I was like, dang, I want to bring this to rehearsal and see if Jack would let us. And we brought it there and Jack loved it.
Nice. So,
Gretsch, goodbye.
Yeah.
But
how does it get to the point to where you make a signature kit that's sale?
Yeah. So fast forward. I remember playing DW drums and I told Scott, I was like, man, I had this portable kit that I was using with Thai drums. Can you make me a kit in those same sizes, which is the portable kit? And he made me a kit. That's what I know about DW. They make custom sizes. So Scott made me this portable kit with them same sizes that I from the other company. I was like, man, I want to do a kit with y'all one day.
Yeah.
When the time comes. And then at the time, and I know this is probably infringing, the Breakbeats Questlove kit was, you know, hot when it came out. So companies are, you know, they're
like, what's our version? Yeah. That's great.
So,
that's,
you know,
that's normal business. Yeah.
So it just worked out. The timing just worked out. And I was able to, you know, be in on the decisions of the, like, the colors and just, the, you know, the sizes. And I'm grateful for the opportunity because it's something that I've wanted to do. I always wanted to do. I just
so cool.
Thank God for that opportunity. And then the latest kit that I made with them is the Nashville Blue. All the drums are snares, and they call them snoms. So you can
really? I didn't know that.
So
snoms.
Snoms. So snare drum tom.
Wow.
And I was like, man, the original concept they were gonna do, because DW they have a snom, but it's not with the wire.
Yeah.
Like with the official
with the
like
snare wire.
Snare wire and the throw.
Yeah, yeah.
We wanted to just put like I forgot what they call those. But I was like, no, I want the actual real, you know, where you can turn it on and off. So I was able to convince him to do that. So that this
yeah, because you need that in order to make it a tom or not, right? If you want to.
Yeah, but LP they make drums where they have a like, you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't want that. I want the real, you know. So big.
Those don't get enough like tension.
Man,
they're not enough. You fucking crank that thing all the way, and it's still not enough.
Yeah. Man, shout out to Rob Dean. That's my PDP rap. So yeah, I'm thankful. This is my second kit with them.
Yeah,
it's out now. The Dobber Jones New Yorker 2, and all of the drums. You know, the one of the main functions is a snare function where you can turn the snares on and off and make it a floor tom, a snare drum. It's available now, and the sizes is a portable vibe. You can carry it. You know, one man show. Get the bags and
I need one of those. I need one for
need
the
to
living
get one
room.
For Jam yeah. Card.
Get one for the Jam Card house, bro.
Got you.
Everyone
got
comes
you.
Through here.
I got you. I
Everybody
got you.
Comes through
I got
here.
You. I got you. But yeah, so I'm thankful for that collaboration. Another collaboration I was able to do was with Peisty Cymbal.
Yep.
The name is DJs 45, PSTX. Now, Peisty, they have this, they have a line called PSTX, which is like, it reminds me of like the Nintendo sound, the lo-fi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The 8-bit sound.
Yep.
It looks like Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So they were doing that already. And I remember having an opportunity to go to the factory, which was a dream of mine. Have you ever been to a cymbal factory?
No, bro, I haven't. I
gotta
have not.
Go. I don't know what brand you play.
I've been with Sabian for years.
Bro, just go.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to see them make cymbals from the ground up in the process. My head was cracked. So I remember making a friendship with Eric Peisty. Big respect to Kelly,
yeah,
the whole team, you know what I'm saying? This is such a crazy story because Andrew Shreve signed me to Peisty. Me and Benny was the last people he signed. Andrew got a gig with Gretsch. He went to Gretsch at the Peisty. So I could have got endorsement.
Yep, absolutely.
It's crazy how things work like that. Like,
no, I'm good.
But and then DW buys Gretsch.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I know. DW buys Gretsch. And now Roland buys DW.
So now I'm able to get a Roland.
Now you got a Roland kit too. Now you got everything.
It's crazy how the universe works, yo. It's like if you're not going to get it now, you're going. But I'm just grateful. So anyway, Peisty Cymbals. I remember going to the factory and I was like, man, I was talking to Eric. I was like, man, it'd be great to have a cymbal set where you can put in your backpack.
Yeah.
You can travel. Because as you know, cymbals are the heaviest thing in life.
For sure.
You know, outside of hardware.
Besides hardware.
I was like, man, could we make a cymbal set that was just all size 12? You know what I'm saying? And like a DJ.
Yeah.
And hi-hat, crash, and a ride cymbal. And you know, he was like, I'm talking with the team. So we was able to do that collaboration. So it's the PSTX DJs 45s, like vinyls.
That's so
like
cool, 45s. Dude.
And one of the symbols look like a vinyl record. It's all black. And my logo, you know, the Ruzic record symbol is actually my face within a vinyl.
That's so cool.
So they was able to use the logo. So I'm thankful that I was able to do that.
It's a 12-inch ride symbol?
Yes.
I need some of these too. I need the whole Daru. I need a Daru setup in my living room, bro.
I appreciate you. But yeah, so you can switch the combinations, the Swiss cheese 8-bit vibes. There is its own thing, but you can also take the ride and get a whole, make it sound like 14s. Like I do that.
Yeah.
But the reason why I wanted to have that portable cymbal set is sometimes you go to jam sessions, people's cymbals are cracked up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And just so if you ever in a tight situation, you can be like, I got my own cymbals.
That's cool, dude.
Because you know, when you go to gigs and play, you got to either bring your own snare. You know what I'm saying? And
you're doing cool shit.
Man, I'm just grateful.
12-inch ride.
Bro.
Come on. That is tight. All 12-inch full cymbal set. Just the thought of that, man. It's really creative.
I appreciate
very,
it.
Very, very cool.
I'm grateful. So shout out to Peisty. You know, it's coming on 5 years, I think.
It's cool for them to trust you.
Yeah.
And not to be like, that's a horrible idea. And instead be like, let's try it. That sounds cool. It sounds unique.
Yeah, it was crazy that the cymbals came out at the same time as the first drum kit.
Yeah.
So the drum kit was all for, you know, portable vibes.
Travel like shit. It's all travel shit. Yeah.
Busking, you know, yeah. Subway, you know, this portable vibe. So, and the cymbals came out, so it just worked out.
Yeah.
Time-wise, the drumsticks, it's a head drumsticks. They make the aluminum.
Oh, yeah.
Which supposed to last longer than a wood stick.
Definitely do.
So shout out to, you know, Bob and the whole team. So
breaking a head drumstick, you're doing something wrong.
I actually broke one.
Did you?
Yes.
Yeah, but it probably took you a long time, right?
Yeah, but because they're you know it's put together, you can it's pieces.
Wow.
The tips you can
yeah
they like screwed on.
Oh wow.
So the thing is, when you break those sticks, you're gonna need new heads because
yeah, it's gonna demolish the drums and the heads. Yeah.
Yo, but yeah, so. The color scheme matches the signature drum kit, so they call it a DJNY Leo stick.
Nice.
Leo gang. So
it's for Leo, not for loser. It's for Leo.
Yep. So that's available, and you know, having a sound, or just one of the things that I learned from the drummers that I admire, it wasn't only the setups. It was the sounds that they had.
Because
sometimes listening to those records when Eric Morenthau, John Patitucci, they were all hiring the same guys. They would have Vinny on some songs, Peter Erskine.
Yeah.
And a lot of those guys, I think they were Yamaha players, but I was able to figure out which drummer was playing by the tuning, the tone.
Mm.
I know it's like, that's a Vinny. That sounds like, you know, because of the touch and the tuning. So I think that's a part of like, you know, developing the sound, you know, even being fans of like Zigaboo from the Meters. When you hear those Meter songs, it's the sound.
Yeah.
The snare drum.
Absolutely.
It's not always about like the setup. The setup is one part, but it's also the sound. So I that's a part of, I was like, man, I need to try to find, you know, things. And so I'm hoping with these signature products, the drummer, they can find their own sound too.
Yeah, yeah.
Twist the combinations around, you know what I'm saying? Try to, that's the whole, you know, that's what I'm advocating for people to go inside and see what is your specialty.
Yeah.
How could I take these things and develop, you know, a voice?
Yeah, man, yeah. I mean, you're doing it. You're giving them the tools to do it.
Thank you.
It's amazing, dude. I want to have the Daru voices.
I got
the bald man. What is that called?
So it's a bald man, the junk hats.
The junk hats. Those junk are hats. So sick, dude. Whenever I show them to people are like, what? Is that,
bro?
I love that it has the
you know I don't know if you know their story. I think they were one part of the story is they wanted to have a acoustic drum that could be used where you didn't have to get the electronic drum to get that clap sound, you know what I'm saying? So yep. I think that was one of the purposes of them making that. So it sounded like the Parliament Funkadelic claps.
Yep.
Like, you know, with the chains and shout out to Bob Man Percussion Cast, Danny and Mike, you know, for doing their thing. And the collaboration, that made sense because I'm all about sounds. Like,
yeah, it's so cool.
Working on MPC, when you're making beats, you add, you know, all of the percussion. So I want to bring that to the drum, you know.
Oh, and dude. Just, I love, I'll play beats. All the time when I'm jamming with people or whatever, I'll do kick, snare, hat, because I have these like 16 hats that Sabian gave me that are prototypes with holes in them, so they sound crazy.
Wow.
And then I got yours, your bald man, the trash.
Oh, the trash joint, junk. Yeah, yeah.
And then I have Trevor Lawrence Jr.'s clap stack.
Ooh, that joint.
So I'll
man.
Just go back between those sounds. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's,
man,
it's so sick, dude.
It's a new day. Back in the days, you needed the Simmons.
Yeah,
you
know I know. You needed some analog. This shit is dope.
You needed all of the things to get those sounds, but thankfully nowadays companies, they're developing where you can have acoustic, you can still use your acoustic drums and not have to plug anything up and still get those.
Yep.
Because a lot of records are made nowadays.
For sure.
it's minimal live drums, but it's programming on top of. So you want to be able to get them gigs and not feel like you can't.
It's tight. Get all these things. Are you investing at all? Stocks, crypto?
Man,
that's, you doing thing?
That's a good question. I wish I had jumped on the stocks years ago. But a good friend of mine that's actually mixing my record, Bob Brockman, he was on that Bitcoin for a minute trying to, you know, get me on. I wish I would have caught that wave, but I don't know. Are you on that stuff?
Yeah, I'm on it.
Is it legit?
I mean, it's definitely legit. You know, it's risky. I mean, crypto is super risky.
Okay.
Investing in general is risky. You never know if when you put a dollar in, if it's going to turn into more or less, you know? So I'm up on some, I'm down on the others, you know, I'm overall up.
Man, I definitely want to get down with the get down, because as you know, nowadays it's
not too late.
Smarter and not harder. And you like,
don't let cash just sit in the bank, bro. Put it somewhere else.
Okay.
Do not let, even if it's $1,000, do not let that shit just sit in a checking or savings account.
Okay.
Buy T-bills. Okay. Get 5% on that money. That's a safe one.
Mm.
Or, man, crypto or stocks, whatever.
Just that word, you sound nervous though. The whole crypto.
Then don't. You know, the crypto shit is wild, bro. It's like I'm up right now, but I was way down. A year ago, it was so far down. But then I just held on to it. And now it's back up, and I'm probably going to cash out soon.
So that's my next question. Do you like, you got to cash out like once?
Man, I have in the past. I definitely don't cash out like everything. I'm holding most of it in. Usually whenever I'm investing in things, like I'm putting all my money into stuff, whatever it is. Whether I'm buying crypto or I'm buying stocks or I'm buying treasuries or saving up for a house or like whatever it is, I'm putting all my stuff. But even to save up for the house, I'll put it in treasuries for the meantime, so it makes 5% instead of just sitting in like a checking account or a savings account.
Yeah.
So I'm putting my money somewhere always.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't really spend. I don't spend a lot. I mean, I don't know. I guess food is like my thing, or I like buying clothes too.
Yeah.
Or watches or whatever. But I don't go ham. I'm pretty responsible with my money.
Man, that's one, being an entrepreneur too, you just learn, you live and learn, you know, and that's one of the things. When you make that money, you got to know that it ain't gonna always be like that.
That's why you got to put it somewhere smart and let that shit work for you.
Okay.
Let that shit work for you.
Okay.
If crypto makes you nervous, don't do it. But I would just put it all in there. That's for sure.
Just the word crypto, just like criminal. It's too close. It's too close. But you know, I have like basically Bob, I trust him. He said he's been able to be, you know, a good look, and I'm definitely open to it nowadays for sure, because it ain't too much stuff left. Everything, it's not the same value with what we do. It's just a lot more disposable.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to really preserve, you know, the little that I have left. I know you are too.
Yeah.
Because like with the drumming, it's everything, all of the things happening.
And
everybody's, they saying what worked for you, and they just jumping on it.
Oh yeah.
And it's just bringing the value down. I mean, it's not wrong with being inspired, but they'd rather give somebody $5 less than get the person that can really do the thing.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like, dang.
For sure.
And you end up going to have to hire me anyway, because they're not going to give you.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to come back around anyways.
But yeah, it's that's what really helped me, is to not just depend on one egg in one basket.
Yeah.
It's like 100, you know, plan A to Z.
For sure.
Because you just, you know, never know. But, you know, tapping into different things outside of music, like that stuff.
Yeah.
Because how I came up, like, rest in peace, you know, to my pops. And I love my mom. I came up in a good home, but I didn't always learn how to, you know, when you get money, it's like what to do. Because they all about like you pay for things, pay for everything in cash.
Yeah, yeah.
But you don't always have to do that. You know what I'm saying? I didn't really learn, you know. I have friends that was into it, but just, you know, and I know there's a lot of, you know, black people, even other people, you know, as a race, you know, that didn't have that that person. You should best invest in stock. I didn't have that.
Right.
I didn't have that. So it's like when you make your money, you happy that you made it. And now you want to reward yourself.
For sure.
So people, they reward themselves. They buy cars, and then, you know, they do all these materialistic things, and then that money's gone.
The money's gone.
It's gone.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, I've learned how to, I'm a good saver. I,
yeah.
You know, and I pay my bills, you know,
good,
I'm
good,
about
good.
Paying my bills, but I definitely, you know, want to learn how to make stuff stretch.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so like what you're saying, so this money can work for you. And it's great to be independent, but, you know, the monies are just moving around differently. And you have all these influencers. It's just a whole different.
Yeah, absolutely.
Different ball game. But.
Well, if you call me anytime, if you're like, yo, where should I put some money? I'll let you know.
Yo.
I'll let you know what I'm doing, at least. I'm not a financial advisor, but you're just my homie and I care. I want to help my friends.
Look for a call in 20 minutes. Well, yeah, I appreciate the advice, but you know, that's good advice to give us and all the other musicians, because a lot of
I would do a whole thing on that. And I've only been like diving into this in the last couple of years. I have not. I mean, before I didn't come from any money, like from my family. And then like once I was playing drums, so it wasn't until recently that I was like, really getting excited about investing and how do you make your money work for you? Happy to share it with whatever I have learned. Happy to share it with anybody.
That's amazing. Thank you for being generous. I said, a lot of us that came up, especially minority, we were just happy when we finally got a little money and we just wanted to go. You know,
don't be in debt. Yeah, yeah, that's cool. Pay with the cash, then you know you got the money. Then you don't owe anyone money.
Yes, sir.
Cool.
Yes, sir.
But instead of just buying the car, buy something that'll work for you, make money instead of depreciate. All right, final question.
Yes, sir.
What is the best lesson that your father taught you?
Man, wow. That's a really good question. He just wanted to be his best. It didn't even have to be with playing. Just be a good human, a human being, you know, just give what you want to give back. He was always, when he was in a room, you knew he was in a room. You know what I'm saying? He made you, you know, feel special.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's what I learned. Just when you go into these environments, try to uplift the room when your energy, even if you don't even touch the stage, your presence. That's how he was when he walked in the room. You know, you knew he was there. So I wanted, that's what I learned. And, you know, give your best in service.
Beautiful. Service. Well, you do that, Daru.
I'm trying.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it.
Daru Jones, ladies and gentlemen, an amazing human, an amazing friend.
Appreciate you.
An amazing musician, an amazing producer, an amazing guy, an amazing stylist, an amazing packer. We're going to do a whole packing tutorial. My guy, love you, bro.
Love you, too. I appreciate you, Elmo. Go with 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 Elmo. This is the stuff, man.